in the build-up to that, the evolution of that, we have to augment human-driven vehicles with software-driven vehicles. And that requires then for humans and robots, in this case, to coalesce, to be on the same road systems and to play nicely together. There'll be more regulation, more standards that will follow the AV bill. So it really is it's a through the looking glass moment. It's the first domino, if you will. One of the big sort of eureka moments eventually for autonomy in the everywhere autonomy problem will be autonomous deliveries to your home. There are several things to solve before we get there.
From the first time founders to the funds that back them, innovation needs different. Our episode partner, HSBC Innovation Banking, is proud to accelerate growth for tech and life science businesses, creating meaningful connections and opening up a world of opportunity for entrepreneurs and investors alike. Discover more at www.hsbcinnovationbanking.com/en-gb. Hello and welcome to the UKTN podcast, a weekly chat with the movers and shakers of the UK tech industry and the destination for all things UK tech related. I am your host, Jane Wakefield, and this week I am joined by Gavin Jackson, the CEO at Oxa, formerly known as Oxbotica. The firm is a leader in autonomous vehicle software. Welcome, Gavin.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
First of all, Oxa has been described as providing the operating system for driverless cars. So let's just have a little brief explanation of what it is that you guys do.
Absolutely. So we, from the very beginning of the company that was founded back in 2014, our founder, Professor Paul Newman, who was the lead professor at Oxford University, had a vision for what he called universal autonomy. And that's to say that all vehicles that perform jobs for humans, whether that be transporting passengers or transporting goods or transporting materials in heavy industry or whatever it might be transporting, that actually the software should be solving one fundamental problem. And that is, where is it in the world? What's around it? How does it perceive the world? And then what does it need to do next in the world in order to progress on its mission, whatever that mission may be? And that's something that we call universal autonomy. So from that day in 2014 to this day, we've been developing a product that we call Oxa Driver to become that operating system for universal autonomy, which is to say, again, that single software can make almost any vehicle operating in almost any environment become autonomous and to do the type of work that a vehicle would do without a driver. That's the origins of the company, and that's where we are today.
Now, I'm personally very excited about the prospect of self-driving cars. I don't love driving. I'd be much happier to just sit in the back and let a car drive me. And it feels I've been writing about this for quite a few years now, and there was a lot of hype around it. Often we were getting comments from Elon Musk. I think at one point he was predicting a few years ago that, self-driving cars would be widespread, fully self-driving cars would be widespread on our roads by now. Well, that hasn't happened. Your predictions are a little bit more cautious. You're talking about two decades. So why have we got this huge kind of potential window for when these vehicles are going to actually be on our roads?
So I think it's a little bit about the best analogous example I can come up with is if you think about computing and how that evolved over the last 50 or so years. And you'll recall that Bill Gates, way back when, had a vision for a computer on every desktop and in every home. Right? That was the vision. But he set that goal and then didn't achieve that goal until 20 years later. And actually, when he set that goal, we'd already had 30 years of computing, but just not on small, personalized, consumer-sized desktops. And the reason for that is the computers, when they first came to be, the first paradigm shift in computers, were nowhere near the sort of price performance that you could deliver to make it accessible to consumers and to businesses on a desktop. They were multi-million pound devices. They took armies of people to administer and to maintain. And it was just a very niche kind of area. And I think in this paradigm, we're now sort of circa 10 years into really the sort of AV driving phenomenon. And at this point, we're following a similar sort of path. We're saying that the earliest places to get the type of price performance and the type of value that can generate a return on investment for businesses is in industrial sectors. It's where there's a tolerance for that type of thing. It's where there's actually a real business need to solve today. If I liken it again to computers, people might not like driving, but driving is a feature of modern day life. You know, your passenger car or indeed a taxi is a market that's pretty well served today. You know, cars exist for consumers to, you know, have a decent enough driving experience in a way that in the industrial sectors or in the logistical sectors or even in public transportation that where they're relying on professional drivers, there's now a shortage of drivers, which is really affecting productivity, which is really affecting, you know, how we move people and things around the world, which has a profound effect on our economies, on our safety posture as an industry, and on everything else in between. And so really, it's about applying the technology in a very pragmatic way, A, where the technology is capable of achieving excellence and the types of safety assurance levels that you need in that excellence, and B, where the world needs it today. And like I say, I don't think that the world is necessarily calling out for self-driving cars and robotaxis today. I think what they are doing is saying, I really need goods to move around the world. I really need for shared passenger transportation to continue or even grow and be more accessible to more people. And that's really what autonomy can unlock today. And that's why our focus is squarely on those markets of passenger transportation and industrial autonomy.
That makes sense. But there is also an argument that bringing out fully autonomous cars on the roads would cut accidents, would cut congestion, because cars would be able to kind of speak to each other and work out, you know, how not to get in those terrible traffic jams that we all hate. So there is kind of a business case for it being more general. Is it that regulation is slow, because obviously this tech needs a lot of regulation? Or is it just that the tech isn't quite ready yet? I mean, we've seen with Tesla, haven't we, that, you know, it's not always foolproof and it's not always accident proof either.
So I think that this is really about, is less about revolution and more about evolution. There's no paradigm of something of this type of size and complexity where you can overnight switch all vehicles driven by all humans in all settings from at once being manually driven to then becoming autonomous. And in the future, it will actually be talking less about autonomy and more about orchestration. That's when you're talking about computers talking to computers and orchestrating their way around the world. It's a little bit more like how, you know, Amazon or Ocado and companies like this, they do their robotics inside the fulfillment centers. They orchestrate movement and they can guarantee that things won't crash and that they won't lead to collisions because it's orchestration and not autonomy. In the build up to that, the evolution of that, we have to augment human driven vehicles with software driven vehicles. And that requires then humans and robots in this case to coalesce, to be on the same road systems and to play nicely together. And that's why we sort of narrow it down to software-driven vehicles won't be driving everywhere yet. They'll be driving somewhere. And actually, on the specific case of congestion in the cities, the biggest move that we see from every city in pretty much every nation that we talk to around the world is that what they're trying to do is to make it more compelling for citizens to surrender their personal passenger cars out of town, and then actually to use more abundant, electrified, a better experience of mass transportation to take you through to the last mile. The same is true for logistics as well. And that is the method that most countries, cities, transport operators, and transport authorities, that's what they're really trying to solve, is how can you use the arterial routes in and out of cities and make the business case compelling enough for there to be more abundant ways of moving people in and out without congesting the roadways. So this is why, again, we think that the arterial routes are more important for autonomy today than they are, if you like, driving, you know, every road in every city in the same way that passenger cars do today. Again, it will evolve, much like computers evolved. It will evolve in the same way. But today, we're seeing a lot of value being created by surrendering vehicles outside of the city centers and using that last mile autonomously with shared electric autonomous transportation.
There's also some quite knotty ethical issues, isn't there, around sort of self-driving cars in terms of, you know, who is going to be responsible if there is a crash? If a person isn't driving, is it the software that's to blame? Is it the company that devised the software that should bear the cost of that? Or, you know, if software has to make a life or death decision swerve away in order to avoid a pedestrian, but at the same time to knock into another car and potentially kill somebody in that car. These are really hard problems to deal with, aren't they? Do you think we're anywhere close to getting our heads around that, both from a regulatory point of view and from the sort of tech and industry point of view?
I think that over the last 12 to 24 months, I think that the industry at large has made great strides. I don't think it's universal. I think that some nations and some bodies are further ahead than others. Just last year in 2023, we saw the King's Speech and new legislation for the UK AV bill passed. And in that AV bill, for the first time, it actually started talking about some responsibilities and the dividing lines of responsibilities, if you will. And this is, you mentioned Tesla earlier, and there are others. But this is where we have to be very clear from a legislation and a regulation perspective in terms of who's in charge of the vehicle at any given time. Because in a Tesla vehicle, whether it's in so-called full self-drive mode or not, the human is very much still in command of that vehicle. This, the user of it is in charge. And if the system fails, then the user is liable for that particular fault. Because they're in command and they should really be thinking about being in command at all times. So you can't really have eyes off, hands off, and in the way that potentially some of these applications are being built. Whereas in level four, it's very much the domain of the software entity, i.e. in this case, Oxa, being in command of the vehicle. And so we would be liable for that. And then taking that a step further, when it comes to liability, it's the full gamut of the solution in the place that it's operating. So the guidance now that is, and this also sort of plays very nicely into what we were talking about before about place specificity and it being about autonomy being launched somewhere rather than everywhere first. And that's because to validate the software, to validate it and assure its safety, you're really kind of validating the software release that's already been tested in that place, and that's Oxa, the vehicle that is actually being hosted on top of, and that sort of falls into the types of safety assurance that vehicle automotive companies already have as part of their own systems that we drive today, and then the place that it's driving in. It's going to be very specific to those three elements so that you get essentially the autonomous system gets the license to drive in that place. That's how we see this starting, and I emphasize the word starting. It will eventually evolve, obviously, into it becoming global, universal, a license to drive everywhere if you pass muster on generalizing your software across all domains. But in the meantime, it's really about where are you creating value for the customer, for the community? Where are you launching that service? And really about it being getting a license to drive for that place in that vehicle with that particular piece of software. So that's how we're solving that today. And we're trying to add as many automotive grade standards to that as possible because they are, you know, inherently safe by construction. You know, brakes don't tend to fail, and steering systems don't tend to fail. They are, you know, really tested with high degrees of certainty, and that's how we're also applying the software rigor to the same types of standards.
HSBC Innovation Banking, our partner for this episode, provides commercial banking services, expertise, and insights to the technology, life science and healthcare, private equity, and venture capital industries. To find out why innovation needs different, go to www.hsbcinnovationbanking.com/en-gb. Now, you mentioned the automated vehicles bill that's going through Parliament. What are your general thoughts on that? Has the UK got it right? Is there things that are not in there that you think should be in there? Is it timely? What's your take on it?
Well, it's all of those things. I'm thrilled, by the way, that the UK is leading here and led it in the right way. You know, with the Law Commission report doing, you know, what they've done, the language that's being used from the Law Commission and likewise in the AV bill is also being used across the United Nations as well. So we're looking at, now, how do we harmonize some of this language across other nations as well? So that's definitely a step in the right direction. It's very encouraging, the start that we've made. I think it is the start. It really does. It starts to really kind of segment, if you will, like I mentioned before, where a user is in charge, where a human is in charge, and when the software is in charge. That's really the starting point, you know, really from a legal perspective as to who's on the hook, you know, in the event of some kind of catastrophic failure. There'll be more regulation, more standards that will follow the AV bill. So it really is it's a through the looking glass moment. It's the first domino, if you will, of what will become standards in the end. But it's very encouraging. It's actually quite different in other nations, I will say. So in the US markets, for example, forever in this market, they've had largely a self-insured way of testing autonomous vehicles in a way that is more challenging to do in the UK and in Europe. And I think that actually the UK and Europe can play a leadership role here in regulating the market and making sure that we're applying the right types of standards and the right rigor to safety in the way that automotive companies do today. So I'm really proud actually of the work and the contribution that Oxa has made into those discussions, and likewise that the UK is leading on this really important agenda for our industry.
So it sounds very much like you think that, you know, this is a tech where the UK is leading. And you mentioned the US. I guess the other difference between the UK and the US is roads. I mean, the UK has much more complicated road systems than the US does. Roundabouts, narrow country lanes. And that's going to play a big role, isn't it, in terms of, you know, if we ever do get to this stage where it's commonplace for people to be driving these cars. That's a technical problem, is it? That just requires a lot more hours on the road to get it right?
It's for sure. So I would say that, you know, the path to universal autonomy, so the path to our eventual vision, is how do you place by place, place type by place type, you know, how do you make the system over time become more generalizable? So that it sees the world the same way, that it understands and knows all pathways, all roadways, all road signs, all traffic distances and traffic light distances and types and everything else. All of them, by the way, are different across the world. You know, the way that you look at a traffic light in the UK, on the roads in the UK, for example, they're right to the left of you most of the time, or right to the right of you, depending on which lane you're in. Whereas in America, they're sort of 50 yards, 60 yards ahead of you. And so, you know, they're different things for the systems to perceive and to learn and to find nuance in. So you're all the time, we're constantly trying to find ways of generalizing where nuance is the sort of dominant feature today. And by nuance, I mean that every place, even in America, even when you have simple grid systems in America, every place is nuanced by something. And this is the famous sort of, 2%, 5%, of long tail edge cases that have been so challenging to solve in AVs is because nuance exists literally everywhere. That could be from driving behaviors to the fauna and flora of the place that's specific. You know, you don't get large dragonflies in New York, but you do in Florida, for example. It's a different type of environment that you need your systems to understand, so it doesn't see them as a potential threat and will stop the vehicle from operating. In the UK in particular, we are quite lucky that we have such complexity, because the noisier and the busier and the more complex the place is, the faster we can find generalization, right? So the more actors there are, the more differences there are in road networks, in roundabouts, and so on and so forth. Ultimately, the filter lanes we have a lot of here that there aren't so many in the US. You know, those types of complexities really kind of build a type of muscle that's not really required in the US. And so it means that we're able to, you know, lift greater weights, if you will, when we go to the US, because it's a simpler set of road networks.
I love your comment about dragonflies. Is it really that nuanced that you have to take into account insect life when you come up with these systems?
Well, so what you're trying to do is you're trying to detect anything that might appear within the sensor stream of the vehicle. And I mentioned Florida in particular because the dragonflies in Florida are the size of birds, and there's no sort of dragonfly detector software that exists in the world, right? Because nobody's ever found the need to detect dragonflies. So our general systems will always have what we refer to sort of in a very parochial way as a stuff detector. So we'll always detect stuff. But if it can detect that stuff as being permeable or impermeable and make a decision based on all of that, and then if you can really kind of then rule out the fact that dragonflies are not, you know, or a swarm of dragonflies are not a brick wall as the laser system might see it as, then you can start to, train the systems to be, to be better in that particular place. But really, every place is different to the last place. You know, the geometry of the place is slightly different. You know, in the UK, there's no standard to curb heights, and there's no standard to, many things, actually. And so we have to be able to deal with all of them. And so nuance exists in almost every road across every route, across every part of the world. And that's what we're solving for in the end. But it does mean that if you want to create value from autonomy today, you have to focus where the world needs it the most, and then narrow it down to the highest value routes that those operating companies, those logistics companies, those delivery companies, those public transport operators of buses and shuttles, is what are the highest value routes for them. And if you can converge those two things, you'll create value today. And that's really where we're focused.
And of course, the other reason, I guess, why you're particularly interested in the flora and fauna of Florida is because you've just recently announced a commercial deal in that state for a fleet operator. So tell me about what you're doing over there.
We're a global company. Our sort of core target markets are here in Europe and in the United States. And our two sort of core segments in those markets are passenger transportation, so shared electric passenger transportation. We think that that's the future of mass transit. And then industrial logistics, industrial autonomy, and so on. So this particular application is really for passenger transportation. Our first customer there is a company called Beep. And Beep, the way to think about Beep, the way I like to describe Beep, is they're a bit like Uber, but for mass transit, for larger form factor of shared transportation. And so they're able to, on specific routes, they're able to pick people up and drop them off. And in the fullness of time, in the areas that they operate, we'll have more flexible on-demand services. So that's their sort of vision for Beep, is to have a sort of an on-demand, abundant shared mobility platform that is electric, shared, and autonomous by design. And we are the autonomy system for that. So we've been in Florida for quite some time. We have co-located actually some of our development team and some of our deployment team just down the road from Beep in Orlando. We also have a test center, so a private track that we do lots of our testing on, which is 35, 40 minutes drive away from that location. But we're operating up and down the state now. So we're operating both in Orlando and in Jacksonville, but we're also opening up new routes with Beep across other cities in other states across the US as well. So there'll be more to follow on that, but we've got at least seven new cities that we'll be launching during the course of this year. So it's a very exciting time for us. And the reason it's exciting, notwithstanding the fact that we're in Florida and we're in all these other cities and states and such like in America, but it's the first time that any European AV software technology company has produced a road-ready code release that can be launched and given to third parties for them to go and operate autonomous fleets. Because that's our business model, ultimately. We are a pure-play software company, which means it has to be easy for fleet operators like Beep to deploy full AV systems. So we work with OEMs to build the reference autonomy designs that they use our autonomy to, and they make the vehicles autonomous on the back of that. They then deploy them. We have already scouted and qualified the routes for Beep, and then it makes it just easy and accessible for Beep to deploy those vehicles in their fleets. So it's an incredibly exciting time for us to have road-ready code for the very first time in any European AV technology company.
Well, congratulations on that. Now, just talk to me a little bit more about the business revenue. You've mentioned one of your clients. Who else have you got on your books? What's the plan for revenue generating and the roadmap generally to get to profitability? Give me a flavor of those things.
Sure. As I mentioned before, we segment between passenger transportation and industrial logistics. So really the major milestones that we are attaching ourselves to at the moment is to develop first anchor customers or category defining anchor customers that really are the first dominoes in any given vertical market, that if you can make them wildly successful without sort of, overshooting, without sort of burning your resources and allocating, more capital to it, if you can make that really successful and make it repeatable, then there are thousands and thousands of transport operators around the world with very similar requirements for autonomy in their fleets, and we can repeat that. So Beep has really been the sort of through the looking glass moment on shared passenger transportation. But of course, there are other yet to be announced, I'll say, but other customers that are hot on the heels of Beep that are repeating the same applications for the same type of thing. In the industrial autonomy space, we've been working with a number of different companies actually across the industrial complex. A good example might be with BP. So with BP, they have a number of growth engines in their diversification, their pull away from fossil fuels into other revenue streams, and we're helping them do that. So they're investing enormous amounts of money into things like solar farms, And this is oftentimes it's challenging for people to get their heads around the sheer size of these solar farms, which makes them incredibly difficult to maintain, to monitor, and to do things like predictive maintenance of solar panels, for example. And these are, you know, several miles long and wide and so on. So we've developed, or they have developed, applications using autonomy from OXA to do things like hotspot detection, anomaly detection, you know, find ways of using autonomous fleets to do the mundane, repetitive surveillance type work that the machines are better at than humans. And that you'd struggle to find a human to do that type of job, you know, to traverse several rows of solar panels that all look the same for several miles, and do that all day, every day. It will be a pretty tedious job for a human to do. And this is perfect for robots to do. And so there's enormous value in that type of application. And there are several thousand repeats of that type of application. You know, similarly, we're working with logistics companies, and we're working with grocery chain companies like Ocado, for example, who are trying to solve the first, middle, and last mile of delivery. One of the big sort of eureka moments eventually for autonomy in the everywhere autonomy problem will be autonomous deliveries to your home. There are several things to solve before we get there, including things that we do sort of in the yards, in the fulfillment centers, in the middle mile of logistics, and other things in between. So there's plenty of opportunity there as well in logistics for working with companies like that to repeat those applications several thousand times over. So really, you know, in summary, I always say that the best way to think about this is as just giant dominoes of a certain type or an application of autonomy to make them wildly successful, to create lots of value for that type of company, such that you can then repeat it time and time again. That's really what we're focused on today. And that's how we have been focused really for the last couple of years.
And I was interested to see that Google has got a small stake in OXA. I mean, obviously Google are developing their own driverless car. So what's the relationship with Google?
It's across several dimensions. So on the one hand, the Alphabet company, which is the parent company of Google, is also the parent company of Waymo. So Google and Waymo are, if you like, siblings in this ecosystem. Yeah, Waymo is really quite squarely focused on, you know, solving the robo-taxi application. And they can, because they are well backed by the Alphabet company and have billions of dollars invested into that space. And if you're going to eventually solve the price performance, the economics of the $5 fare that you're able to receive on a robo-taxi journey, in exchange for the billions of dollars that you invested there, it takes a Google to be able to do that, right? So it's the unit economics don't kind of work out for mere mortal companies like us. And so for us, we're really kind of solving different parts of autonomy. We're solving industrial autonomy. We're solving your shared passenger transportation in a way that is not the focus of Waymo today. You know, likewise, we're also using and creating new tools with generative AIs, for example, that themselves are extremely valuable across multiple domains, not just in AVs, in fact. So, you know, one of the ways in which we have developed tooling with Google in conjunction with Google is to say that it would be impossible for us to drive, you know, with a human, with tires, you know, in an actual car, to drive enough miles to create enough variety and nuance, if you like, in the experiences of the AV system to satisfy the validation requirements to an automotive grade standard. It would take millions of miles of driving to do that. And so you have to find better ways of doing it. And so what we tend to do is we tend to take, you know, the real world driving miles. We collect all of the sensor data that from the vehicles in that particular place. We recreate them in the metaverse with a product that we call MetaDriver. And then we essentially use generative AIs to generate synthetic versions of those exact scenes so that we never have to drive them in order to experience them. So if I give you a tangible example, let's say that you're the number 9 bus is taking you from the park and ride outside of Oxford into Oxford city center. And you've got some video camera footage of that particular drive and some laser capture of the geometry of that particular drive. So you understand, you've got the data of that particular place, but it was sunny that day and the sun was sort of high in the sky. And there was no water on the ground from rain, and there was only a few actors on the roads at that particular time. That's not enough to give you the type of assurance that you might need, and the variety to create that assurance that you might need to say that you were safe by construction. So you have to generate it. So from that very same route, we can take the whole route and turn it into snow, into different times of the day where the sun is low in the sky, high in the sky, in different positions, where there's glare coming off the road from rain, where there's fog and different sort of densities of fog, where there's different actors, you can spawn actors. And ultimately what we've done is we've created, as well as these generative AIs, we've created adversarial AIs that are designed specifically to give that place and that system and that vehicle a really hard time. Like, try and make it, you know, have some challenges, but do it in the metaverse, not on the road where you want to keep people safe. And so we use these adversarial AIs to create new scenarios and auto-generate new scenarios so that we can test on a vast, vast size of data and variety of data, and then really kind of expand the scenarios that they might encounter in order to make them safe by construction. So it's quite an exciting place. That's why Google are so excited about the whole thing as well. It's a great partnership. We value it greatly.
Well, and it's great to hear the metaverse being used for something sensible for a change, because
indeed, absolutely, we couldn't do it any other way. It would be near impossible, I think, to drive, physically drive that many miles and collect enough variants and data to be able to do it. So we have to find better ways, and Google collaborations with Google have really helped us to do that.
Well, thank you, Gavin. That was a fascinating insight into the work that you guys are doing. But sadly, that's what we've got time for on this week's edition of the UKTM podcast. Everybody listening, thank you very much. We will be back with another episode next week. But in the meantime, you can keep up to date with all the latest UK tech developments at www.uktech.news. Don't forget to follow UKTN on LinkedIn and X, where you can also get in touch with me with your comments and suggestions about the show. Until next time, goodbye from me. This podcast is brought to you by HSBC Innovation Banking, the power behind the UK's forward thinkers, future makers, and leap takers. They're helping to ignite the bold ideas that reshape our world. Go to www.hsbcinnovationbanking.com/en-gb to find out how innovation needs different.